Hi, I'm W2OP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the one and only Speech, of course, of the hip-hop group Arrested Development. He'll be coming to City Winery on March 8th for two shows, 7 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. Thanks so much for joining us, Speech.
My pleasure, man.
Now, there's no way you remember this because you're all over the place, but my buddies Kevin Sampson and I, he used to be in a hip-hop group. We filmed a concert of yours down in Richmond. I think you opened for, was it Wale once? And we chatted at a hotel one time. And
oh, I remember that.
You remember that?
I do. I remember it, yeah.
That's so cool. But so, all right, so I've seen that show. This was, God, probably like 7 or 8 years ago, back when we were in film school. But so what is this show, though? City Winery is a much more intimate venue than an outdoor spot like that one was. How's this show set up?
Well, really, we're going to do a celebration. And it's like celebrating the first album, celebrating the music of Arrested Development, but also the diversity and the brilliance of hip hop. So it's going to be fun.
Absolutely. I want to do a little bit of a deep dive. Take me all the way back. You were born in Milwaukee, and then I think you moved to Tennessee. At what age did you move there?
Well, I was born in Milwaukee. I moved to Atlanta, actually, in 1987. And then I wrote the song Tennessee because my favorite grandmother lived in Tennessee. And she passed away. So we all went to Tennessee for her funeral. And in that same week, my brother passed away. So the last place I saw both of them was in Tennessee. So I never actually lived in Tennessee. I went there every summer. But the significance of the song was that it was the last place I saw my dear grandmommy and my brother.
Wow, that's awesome to hear that, because I feel like a lot of people, they hear that, you know, those lyrics, take me to another place, take me to another land. They think of a larger, you know, social commentary on America with that. But it's awesome to say that there's a personal story there.
Yeah, it's both, you know. I mean, that song is so special to me because of their lives, and it was our first single, and we blew up from that single. So I feel like it was a gift from our ancestors to us, so... Yeah, that song was one of the easiest records I've ever written, because literally as the lyrics were just pouring out of me, my thought process matched exactly what the lyrics were. I didn't have to backtrack and sort of think through it. And does that sound good? It was just a very natural progression. And similar to what the lyrics say, Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I'm black and proud, problems got me pessimistic, you know. And then it goes on to say, you know, my grandma passed, my brother's gone, I never felt so alone, you know, so things like that.
I mean, it's pretty awesome that you can tell an intimate story along with the scope of that, too. I mean, you just talked about your personal, you know, relationships that you're working out there, the grief, the personal grief, but then also juxtaposed with a larger, almost, you know, strange fruit style commentary. It's amazing. All right. Well, that was just one of like three major hits I was off on the album. 3 years, 5 months, and 2 days in the life. You could have said 3 years and lots of hits in 5 days. I remember the Everyday People remake, too. We all, you know, we all grew up listening to the Sly and the Family Stone version of that. When you guys sampled it for that, I mean, how did that actually take place? Did you listen to that growing up as a kid, or when did that sort of start, you know, trickling in your mind, like, oh, okay, we gotta sample this one?
I actually just got into Sly and Family Stone really close to when I wrote that song. And so it was just a beautiful chorus, and we really didn't sample it, but instead we re-sang it. So, yeah, it was different. It was different energy. But we wanted to pull that sentiment of I am everyday people, but related to what we were going through.
When you guys sing that at concerts, like let's say City Winery coming up or wherever you do your shows, do you find that that one sort of connects across generations? You know, you have people in the audience that remember the Sly Stone version, and then also younger folks that grew up with you guys. Is that one of your cross-generational ones where everyone in the audience is, you know, bobbing their head?
It's funny. Our show, for some reason, really responds well to all ages throughout the entire show. So, like, from the very beginning, it's high energy. It's very fun. It's not very introspective. And it's a more light, fun show. People bring their friends out. They bring their family members. And a lot of mothers and fathers bring their young teens and adults, young adults there, which is great. So it's like anywhere from 18-year-olds to all the way to like 60. You know, it's just a really great celebration of hip hop music.
Absolutely. Well, we can't do the interview without Mr. Wendell. How did you come up with that little thing? Every time you hear that, it's the ultimate earworm. Take me into that. When do you drop that in there in the recording session?
Well, that was a sample from Sly and the Family Stone, and I made it go backwards, and I just loved it. I actually fell in love with that era of music, the early 70s, late 60s. And so for me, it was just another opportunity to sort of bring that energy to the present day, which for that record, it was the early 90s.
Well, and talk about what the lyrics talk about, too. It's sort of that, you know, it's similar to what was that Whitey Ford Sings the Blues, the What It's Like song, you know, the homeless man on the street kind of a deal. Why was it important to pen that one?
Definitely. Well, before we blew up, we used to hang around a lot of homeless people. They used to come to our studio. We would just sit and talk with them and just hang with them. And their knowledge, their freeness of mind and thought was so inspiring. They didn't have the confines that a lot of us have who are sort of on the grid in a sense. We work a job, we go home, we're working for the white picket fence and the whatever people are trying to accomplish in their life. They didn't have a lot of those constraints. And so they saw humanity in a different way. They saw the world in a different way. And it wasn't as systematically sterile. And I was inspired by their lives.
So in a way, you know, even though they're on hard times, listening to that song, I sort of think we can, it's almost like you're encouraging us to learn from the, you know, the non-materialistic trappings. Like, we can learn
exactly.
From that.
Exactly. That song is about that. Uh-huh. We definitely can learn from that. I agree.
Absolutely. All right. So it's amazing. All three of those are on that same album, and then Take Me to Grammy Night. You guys win not one, but two. You win by, you know, best rap performance by a group, which is a big deal in itself. But then also you guys win, best new artist or what? I mean, man.
Yes, best new artist.
Talk about sitting in the crowd there and hear them call your name the first time and then also the second time. What's that experience like, getting to go up on stage and realize, wow, we've made it. The world knows us now.
It was surreal. It was a dream come true. As a little kid, I always looked at the Grammys, hoping and praying that I could be on there. And to be honest, feeling like it would never happen. And so it did. And it was just being there in the flesh was absolutely surreal and amazing. And even being nominated was amazing. So the fact that we won, I mean, the first time was just incredible. But then the second time was just a whole other level. Not to mention we had won awards. Because, you know, awards come in season. So we had done a number of award shows and won a number of awards during that season. So all of it was surreal, man. It was a beautiful experience.
And were you guys going up? You were going up against the Chronic that year, right? That was the year that Dre did the Chronic.
Dre, yep, Sir Mix-a-Lot, a lot of really great popular music.
Yeah, so I mean, tell me how your album sort of compared or even contrasted with sort of the style of, you know, let's say something like the Chronic that was a huge deal, but you guys almost had your own vibe to yours. I mean, I know the title was a reference to how long it takes to. for you guys to get a record contract, right? But yeah. You know, how, musically, how do you think it compared, and why do you think it stood out so much that you were able to beat those guys on come Grammy night?
What I personally loved about our contribution at that point, and even still, is that it was such a statement that black music is diverse, it is colorful, it's ancestral, it's present day, it's future. And so I think that the Chronic was a wonderful sonic record. And at the same time, it conceptually talked about a lot of things that was pretty stereotypical about black people. And we wanted to expand and push way past those horrible stereotypes about us, you know, being violent, gang members, thugs, you know. This is about the country. This is about family, marriage, you know, sentimentality. And just all of those types of things. So there's a lot of different themes and a lot of different vibes on that record. And I think that's what made it stand out.
Absolutely. I mean, but that was, I mean, we're talking 1992 at that point. I mean, obviously the songs are still echoing in our heads to this day, but speak to what you were just talking about. How do you think that message has been received and by your fans over all these different years later, you know? How have you kind of kept that unique angle going?
For me, it's my natural point of reference. It's my natural worldview. And I get so much fan mail. The whole group does. We get so many fans that come up to us at every show across the world. I mean, we tour Europe, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Africa. I mean, everywhere we go, people are so appreciative. And it seems to have been even more intense now because there's less of what we offered and what we offer. So, yeah.
Well, just you've been generous with your time. And, I mean, keep doing it. Like you said, there is less of what you offer. I want to keep hearing more of what you guys offer. Everyone come out to City Winery on March 8th and check them out. Just in closing, final sell. Why should our listeners come on out?
No doubt about it. Come on out. It's going to be an amazing show. Two shows. It's going to sell out. So get your tickets today. And we have a new album. Go to our website, arresteddevelopmentmusic.com. It's called Craft and Optics. We're going to be doing about three songs from that. So it's going to be a fun show.
Thanks so much, sir. You've been generous with your time. Again, everybody, speech from Arrested Development, planned City Winery on March 8th. Two shows, 7 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. Thank you, Speech.
Thank you.